All right, another day of practice out there in West Virginia for your Houston Texans, and sounded like it got spicy at some point, so it's time to hear from the head coach of your Houston Texans, D'Amico Ryans. After yet another day of practice, let's hear what he had to say. I guess he didn't say much then, huh? That was very quick there, Fig, now, wasn't it? All right, while we wait for that, yeah.
Oh. You know, when guys get into it sometimes, it shows feistiness, but also, you know, obviously cooler heads eventually as well. Think of that, just normal camp kind of.
And we had a really good day today at practice. I saw very competitive periods on both sides. Like, we had a tough physical short yardage period today, and it was a lot of back and forth. Guys did a great job up front, D-line, O-line. Those guys were competing and battling. That's what you see every day. Our receivers and DBs, those guys competing. Receivers making plays, DBs making plays on the football. We have a really competitive team. That's my takeaway from our camp thus far, and that's how it should be. So I'm excited just to see these guys go play against someone else. It is that time of camp where it's going to be a little more chirpy. You're going to see fights and scuffles happening. But it's just you get tired of hitting the same person. You get tired of going against the same schemes over and over again. So it's that time for us to go play a game.
D'Amico, that being said, what is the line when, you know, DBs may be taking guys to the ground? What is the line for you as a head coach where it falls during training?
Right, it happens. Guys are going to go on the ground, but we try our best to make sure guys are staying up and making sure we're as safe as possible. But I get it, it's football. Guys are going to go to the ground. Sometimes you just can't control that, and it happens at times. It's just, for me as a head coach, it's no cheap shots. All right, it's doing things that you wouldn't do in a game. If it costs you a penalty in a game, that's not what we're teaching out here. So it's just a matter of trying to stay as safe as possible, but also, you know, trying to play with the edge, trying to play fast and physical as well. Nick has been consistent. He's done a really good job. Like I said, I see a very physical runner when he has the football in his hands. He does a really nice job in protection schemes of staying square, picking up the blitzes from the defenders. He's just overall all around solid, consistent. He's gotten better every day that he's been here. Kamari continues to improve just his details, and that's what sticks out about him. Like a year two player who doesn't feel like a year two player, he's continuing to ascend, continuing to make plays, continue to push himself to be in those tough spots, you know, going against Nico, going against Higgins. Like, those are tough guys to go against, and he battles every single day, and he finds a way to make a play. And I think he made two picks today on the football. So it's impressive to see such a young player who's always dialed in, always bringing great energy and great emotion to our defense, and the guys, they really vibe with that, and he's a spark plug for our team.
Coach Robert, some of the criteria that goes into making up that unofficial depth chart.
Omar gives it to me, and I just say, let everybody have it, tear it up, and everybody make a big deal out of who's where, because it's unofficial. Yeah, Christian and Damon, they're chomping at the bit to get out here. Yeah, I have to hold those guys back because they're ready to go. They want to practice. They want to be out here. And they're definitely making a lot of progress. They're in a really great spot. It's cool to see them out, you know, in their pads finally. I know it's great for them. Anytime you're on the side, you're rehabbing, those type of things, just mentally, like, you want to get back out with the guys. And so today was a big day for them to get back out here, go through some of our walkthrough periods, put the pads on. It was a great day for them. Yeah, we prepare all of our guys the same. You know, I don't try to go in predicting exactly who they're going to try to attack or what they would do schematically. I just know that I want to have two great guys on the edge of our defense that's up front rushing and also in the pass coverage who can make a play. If you go to any side, we want it to be tough. So it's They want to challenge Kamari, great. They want to challenge Stingley, great. We feel good about both of those guys being able to make a play versus any one-on-one matchup.
Coach, on camera. Going back with Christian, is there any challenge to kind of getting him in the mix, given that y'all were without him for so much last year? How do you imagine that happening? Is that kind of a challenge as a defensive coach?
No, it's not a challenge getting Christian back. It's just a matter of him like being in a good spot where he can come out and – and they'll play well. He's been dialed in. He's been in a ton of meetings, a ton of walkthroughs on the side, even though it hasn't been live, full-speed reps. Coach Davis and Coach Ben Bolin have done a great job of, putting him in positions, getting him mental reps, and he's done a great job of handling that. So when he comes back, it's nothing new to him. It's just a matter of getting back into playing football. So there's no challenge there. During this time of camp, so I tell the guys, everything is an evaluation. Like, and I mix it up on coaches, like the morning of the practice, right, to see how coaches handle it, to see how players handle being moved into a different position. Because as we know, we line up in a game, anything can happen, right? Guys are injured and your plans change very quickly. So how do you adapt? How do you adjust on the fly? So coaches have to be able to adapt and adjust well. Also players. Tay has done a really good job over at left tackle. We bumped Titus out to right, just mixing it up as much as possible. And that's not the only position. I mean, we move the guys around, linebacker, D-line. Guys are moving all over the place just to see, what can guys handle. And that's the point of camp. We wouldn't be able to do this any other time throughout the season. So I put a lot on guys mentally in camp to see what they can handle. I already answered your questions. Today from our run game, you saw the level of physicality and intensity that it takes to run the football from our offensive line. So that's where it all starts. They had the right mindset. You got the right mindset. You're going to move people off the line of scrimmage. So that's where it starts. So they're ready to roll from that standpoint. They had a good day in the run game.
We'll take a few more.
Yeah, Damian has played a lot of good football in his career. He's rushed for over 1,000 yards. He's made those home run plays. He's done it as the kick returner. So he's just a well-rounded player who is not new for him. The game isn't too big for him. And when the lights are on, Damian, we know he can go out and perform well. So whenever that time comes for him to get back out there, it's just exciting. Be exciting to see him out there.
You guys got Toby in the middle of last season.
Yeah.
What do you see for him now? You've had more time with him and then what he's been able to do
with him? With Tommy, when I talk about being consistent, growing every day. Tommy, if I had to bet, he's our most consistent player probably on our team. Like, this guy he was in our building working, like the first player in February. He's in the weight room working out, and he's never missed a beat. Like, he's always working. He's always doing it the right way. I can always highlight Tommy in a meeting because his technique, effort, fun, everything is going to be on point every single time. And it's not by happenstance. Like, this guy is working in the background to be where he is. And so it's cool for younger guys to see a guy like Tommy who's bounced around. But, man, he's stuck here with us because it's a guy you can trust. And that's what we build here in training camp. You got to show your teammates that, man, you can trust me. I'm going to do it exactly how the coaches are asking me to do it. So Tommy is a guy who has all of my trust in the world. Yeah, the defense for our roster, they're one part of it, right? We play all three phases, have to play really well together. Our defense has some good plays here or there, but offense as well, we got to play together. And that's what a team football is all about. It's about playing together, playing complementary football. So it's not just going to be one-sided. We want all three phases to play and help each other out, and that's what we're building here.
Thanks, Coach.
All right, thank you guys.
There you go. D'Amico Ryans, head coach of the Houston Texans, talking after a day of practice. From the 408 on the text line, D'Amico says the same things Bill O'Brien says, but with a smile, no substance at all. Is that how you interpret it? Because, I mean, there was definitely a couple of answers that he gave today that, I mean, I won't say from whom, but they solicited an eye roll in this room. No?
That would be me.
I was like, I mean, look, yes, I wasn't going to say who.
I will absolutely say it was me. Hold on. Just hold on a second.
What happened?
Omar gives him the depth chart?
Yeah.
And
if you're unfamiliar, Omar is the head of PR for the Texans, the head of communications there. And so, again, we talked about this to some degree, the idea of, hey, the depth chart is oftentimes, it's not as, you know, as informative as a regular season depth chart when it comes out when, you know, I think there's a lot more consideration put into it. Some
Omar's
coaches,
good.
Some coaches barely do anything.
Yeah,
I'm not. I'm with you. I'm not taking this all the way to the idea that it's just handed to me and I sign off on it.
Yeah.
I think obviously that's tongue in cheek to kind of remind us that hey, it might not mean it. But the ways that it's set up does feel like it says some things, and it feels like it falls in line with what we're seeing out there, which would seem to intimate, I think, that it's not just Omar or whoever else on the outside, you know, trying to just draw up the depth chart and assuming what D'Amico thinks. I think that this is insightful from the coaches, right?
It is absolutely.
Do you feel like Omar did come up with this and then he had the coaching staff look over it?
No.
He said, all right, this is cool.
And there's a good tell. There was a good tell at the end of that availability right there that this was very, very much thought about, rewarding players that are working hard, players that have earned the spot. As I said earlier, it might not mean a whole lot right now for us and even maybe, a lot of people in that organization, but it means a lot to these players to have their hard work, you know, justified or rewarded with, like, let's say, Ariante Ursary on the first team offensive line on the initial unofficial depth chart. It means a lot to those people, to those players. And I think the tell we got was that he went on and on and on about Tommy Togiai. I mean,
consistent player.
Togiai is the backup on the interior defensive tackle. That's not somewhere we would have put him, or Omar would have put him, if he hadn't been. What did he say about him? I mean, he said he's the number. Let me make sure I get this right. Our most consistent player probably on our team, Tommy Togiai. That's a reward that he's on the depth chart right behind, you know, the first group. This was interesting, this depth chart, and I think it said a lot to the players.
Yeah, a couple things that I took note of is the idea that, and I mean, it makes sense when you hear it. Christian Harris has been involved in meetings, and, you know, obviously they're just waiting for him to be available to jump back in, which obviously, again, talking about the depth chart makes sense as to why he is put as Henry Toto's backup and ahead of EJ Speed, I guess, to some degree.
Yeah.
They still believe very highly in him, and they think, hey, it's just a matter of him getting out on the field. One thing that I don't even know if we have the opportunity to talk about really in depth right now, we might have to circle back around to him. When he was asked about, you know, moving Ariante Ursary to left tackle and then, you know, kind of moving Titus out to right tackle, that little musical chairs that they've done on the offensive line, D'Amico decided to take that in a way of talking about how everything is an evaluation, less of necessarily an evaluation individually on maybe Titus or really more Ariante. He said everything's an evaluation. They're moving things around on everybody, including the coaches, because that's how things happen in the season. And I don't know how much I believe that, at least in regards to the way that they are operating the offensive line. I do find the concept very interesting, and I kind of want to do a thought experiment, or you know, kind of probe out how far does that go, and maybe how much could that assist in kind of the coaching. And when did that start? Is that something that he's kind of introduced recently, or has that been in play in the entirety of his tenure in the previous two seasons? Because that would also mean a little bit something different, I think, under Bobby Slowick's tenure as the offensive coordinator.
Yeah, no, I think that was that stood out to me as well. On the offensive line, though, they're testing people, they're trying things. He said they flip things around even before practice to make sure the coaches, are kind of light on their feet and can make adjustments, but it still matters, like, who the players are that you're moving. Like, he talked about, we put Titus out at tackle like it was just on a whim. Hey, let's try Titus at tackle. No, I think they're, rewarding him, testing him there, because they don't have a lot. You know this. they don't have a lot of practices. There are just not a lot of them anymore. It's not two-a-days and three-a-days anymore and five preseason games. It's very limited. You don't just waste time, you know, on a whim.
That's fair. All right, yeah. We'll talk more about that. We'll chat more about that as we continue. But that was D'Amico Ryans talking after another day of practice. There were some discussions about the offense, maybe not as a whole, but talked about Nick Chubb, talked about obviously the seeming scuffle that we had there, talking about how it's just everybody's competitive, but, you know, it gets tiring seeing the same guys.
Yeah.
So, yeah, maybe we'll get more information. We'll definitely get more information about the offense at 1240, talking to Sean Pendergast and I think Seth Payne as well. But coming up next, let's get to our lunchtime confessions, and we will do that next on Sports Radio 610.
So we were talking earlier about the Astros, pitchers coming back, throwing minor league games. Eric Geddy's going to pitch tomorrow. Good news, maybe a little bit of bad news with Yordan and Jake Meyers, you know, still ramping things up. Here's my confession, though. And maybe it's just PTSD with how long it's been with Lance McCullers Jr. They call it confessions for a reason. I don't think I'm buying the blister thing. I don't think I'm buying the blister thing. He went on the IL, retroactive to July 20th. That's a 15-day IL. Today is day 16, and we're hearing a week or two. Now, apparently he threw some with simulated or something like that, four innings. I forget exactly what it was. With this, if he's well enough to throw right now, and you're going, 20, 25 days if it takes longer for him to come back from the IL with a blister? That is one hell of a blister. That is the mother of all blisters.
By the way, the blister, four innings, simulated game at an offsite facility on Wednesday.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I mean, it's the Astros' own damn fault. I don't think I'm being cynical here. You know, I don't think I'm being jaded or whatever.
I mean, you are being cynical, but you feel
like
you're
justified. But I think
there's good
reason, yeah.
So, yeah.
A blister that's going to be 20, 25 days? A blister.
I mean.
Yeah, I mean, it could be true, but, I mean, they did this to themselves.
Right.
So, I can't have a pushback if I, you know, if you saying this, I can't push back and say, no, that ain't true. But, like, I don't know.
There are pitchers who get a smaller blister, presumably, and there's this stuff that you put on it, kind of hardens the skin and makes it crusty to get a better grip or whatever, and all that, and don't miss a start. You know, now it might be just a smile, you know, the start of one or whatever, but 20 to 25 days for a blister.
I didn't know he was going to miss this much time. I thought the freak accident in the workout room would have been longer than this.
Yeah.
Yes, from 3-4-6. He's in an offside play? Yeah, he's hurt. the thing that I'm, like, my, I guess, pseudo-conspiracy theory, if I get into that place where I'm like, hey, it's not a finger blister, is I think it's mental, man.
Could be.
I think he just needs to get himself back in a place where he's, like, mentally in the right place. Like, we recall, you know, what happened when he had his bad game and he had the idiot, you know, threaten his family. He's had a lot of different mental things. And, you know, again, he's going to have to be a pitcher. It's going to have to happen a lot more with his brain than it is just him blowing it past anybody. Mm-hmm. And we've seen that waiver. So I do wonder if, you know, this is the, like, I don't want to say phantom IL, but an opportunity for him to get himself right mentally so that when he does return, like, he is in the right space.
I feel better about that.
Yeah, but there's
in a weird way.
What's the good way of putting that on the putting that on the injury sheet?
Yeah, they're using blister to kind of get his mind right again, or get him refocused, however you want to put it. You know, it's I'm sorry, I don't buy it.
All right, so this is not like a deep confession, but it happened all weekend, and then it happened again for me yesterday, and I just keep looking at it. I see Correa in that number one jersey, and it's this really feeling that comes over me. Like, it feels so surreal.
Mm-hmm.
See, it's almost like
and it's not happening.
This is not the best way of explaining it, but it's the thought that keeps coming to mind. Like, have you heard of, like, phantom limb syndrome? Like, for, like,
not.
Amputees where at times, like, you know, they no longer have, like, a leg or an arm, but they have the sensation that it's there.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like,
oh. I didn't know that's what it was called.
Yeah, but it's, phantom limb syndrome.
Yeah.
It's like that, but in reverse, mm-hmm. where I see him and I'm like, no, I know that's not real. Wait, no, but it is. Like, he's back. Yeah, he's like this. No, I know that he was gone, but he's there again. I'm looking at him. It's happening.
You that white girl on the plane.
Yeah.
That he is not,
it's not real.
I mean, look, my brain for a split second, damn near every time I see him, is like
Mandela effect almost.
Yes, I don't know what way. I don't know exactly what the psychological phenomenon would be, but whatever it is, it
he's been here all along. You didn't know that?
It keeps happening to me. Like I just keep looking at him like, this isn't real, is it? Yeah. Is this really happening?
It's kind of like he never left.
That's what I'm saying. Almost like Mandela effect. Like, y'all didn't know that? He's been here the whole time. It's like Fruit Loops and Fruit Loops with the two O's, you know. Wait, what? Is that real?
Yeah, so that it's I don't know how many other people have been in that space, but it's just been a surreal experience watching him over the last, what is it, 5-6 days?
Yeah, that's a good one.
I got to confess, man, I almost got.
Uh-oh.
Like Lopez style got.
Hey.
No.
Yeah, almost got scammed or whatever it was. So, so this text came into my phone around 1:49 yesterday. And it says, come to my house to roast seafood tomorrow. I'm like, what? The number is not saved in my phone. I'm looking like, I don't know who this is.
Yeah.
And I'm thrown off because I thought it was a Dallas number.
Mm-hmm.
And Reggie, what's the area code? What's some of the area codes for Dallas?
817-214.
I thought it was a 214 number. So I'm like, okay, maybe it's somebody important. So I wait a little bit. Mm-hmm. I wait to about 3 o'clock to respond.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, who is this? And they said, sorry, I looked at the number again, thought it belonged to my friend. Hope I didn't disturb your beautiful day. So I'm like,
was it an actual accident?
This is where I responded, because sometimes I like to be funny when stuff like that happens. Yeah. I'm like, okay, it's cool. I was going to take you up on the offer, LOL.
Yeah.
Have a good one. Yeah. So I thought that was it.
Yeah.
They responded, thank you. I just contact my friend. If you are in Los Angeles, I invite you to come along. So I'm like, all right, like, move on, buddy. Like, so I said, sorry, I'm in Houston. Thanks for the invite. I'm trying to
end. You're already in too deep.
Yeah. That's strike two right there.
Yeah, you're in too deep.
So
I'm trying to see where the elaborate scam leads to.
The person responded. This is where the scam, this is where I'm like, man, I'm stupid right here.
Because as of right this point, it doesn't sound like a scam. It's just like a weird cute interaction that you would see on the internet.
Yeah. So this is where the scam, I'm just like, man, I'm stupid.
Mm-hmm.
They responded and said, never mind. This invitation will not expire. Maybe we can have a barbecue together in the future. Nice to meet you. My name is Ara, and I'm 40 years old. What about you?
Oh, no.
Block.
Yeah.
Bliggity, bliggity, bliggity.
Started searching for that information.
Yeah, I'm just like, man. Yeah. I'm like, it got me with the seafood, though.
They're good, though, man. Yeah, they're good scammers.
And how I mentioned, I thought it was a Dallas area code. This area code 213.
Yeah.
So that's what got me. Yeah. If I would have knew that was a Los Angeles area code, I would have been totally, I would have blocked it.
Now you're craving seafood.
Yeah. I'm like,
he wants to go get a
I'm like, roasted
bag.
Seafood. Yeah. I'm like, who is this? I have no clue who it is.
Yeah.
So I waited like 2 hours to respond.
Mm-hmm. I'm still not sure they were scamming you, because that it very well could still be. Yeah. But like
that last one, man. Nah, the last one. Nice to meet you. My name is this. I'm 40 years old. What about you?
Yeah.
Nah, man.
You was like, you too friendly?
If you're trying to get in touch with your friend, like, why are you focused on me?
But you'll take anyone. You'll take some cat from Houston.
Yes, I'm like, nah, this is a scam.
What, people can't be nice no more?
Nope.
No, they can't.
No, they cannot be nice. And back in the day, I actually got somebody's number just off a mistake one time.
Oh, yeah?
Somebody texted me.
Like, legit.
Yeah, and I was going back and forth. I'm like, this the wrong number.
Mm-hmm.
And then we actually started being cool. And it was a cute little girl, too, man. So, like,
but not in 2025,
Nah, there's no way in hell that's happening.
She ruined it for you, though, man.
Yeah.
Now you're all like, oh, yeah, I'll go get some seafood.
Yeah, I'm thinking like, oh, okay. Nope.
You know, a lot of people think that the Little League World Series is, overexposed too much. They're showing all these regional games now on TV. I don't care. It gets me. Every single year, I get sucked. It's just, Figgy was talking, it's just kind of wholesome, even though it's been commercialized on ESPN beyond belief. I still just, like, if the TV's on and there's nothing else, I'll put it on there, and I'll still do my stuff, but I'll be watching and We're watching it today. Something about the Little League World Series. I don't care about how overexposed it is. You got Trevor Lawrence pitching for the Illinois team today. Did you see that dude? I mean, it's just fascinating.
Let me guess. He's tall, white, long hair.
Yep, that's Trevor Lawrence pitching for the Illinois team. We had that big dude pitching for Delaware that was impressive looking. It's something about the Little League World Series, man.
Easy. You know what I think it is? I think it's being old. And I say this with respect because I think I'm getting to this place where I'm getting old. Mm-hmm. Because you know what I do when I watch Little League World Series? It doesn't happen often, but in the same way you're talking about, mm-hmm. I just kind of put it on. I smile like an idiot.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, that's it. I smile like an idiot. You know why? It's like, oh, man, look at these kids.
Well, yeah.
What's the one thing y'all like most? What's the one thing y'all like most about the Little League World Series? Like a little tit little thing.
Well, I do like the introductions where they say something funny or whatever, but really the great plays, like that dude is 12 years old. There was a diving play earlier. I was like, dude, that's big time.
I kind of like whenever they up the bat and then they got the little fun fact about him.
Yes. Yeah, that too.
Maybe like favorite artist, Ludacris. I'm like, Ludacris?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's
favorite artist.
That's one of mine.
It'd be a little dorky looking white dude. Yeah. Favorite artist, Ludacris.
Somebody said even, favorite like, player, what? Randy Johnson.
That's it.
I was like,
that's
Randy
it.
Johnson.
Wait, the ones where I'm like, I know you're lying, right? So shout out to Cash. I'm not gonna say your last name, Cash, but on there. Favorite TV show, SpongeBob SquarePants.
Yeah.
That's what we are in your wheelhouse.
Yes,
but
yes.
You're talking about little kid, talking about Randy Johnson. Either your parents are really good at informing you about the olden days, yeah. Or you are lying to me, friend.
You know, another thing real quick I like about Little League World Series, for the most part, the coaches are not jerks. They're always like real comforting and, all right, well, you know, they got us. And you know, it's like the way it's supposed to be, you know?
Yeah.
So
there you go. Those are our lunchtime confessions. By the way, 832, who's the Astros starter? We now know it'll be A.J. Blueball, who All is right. the starter. And
actually, can't wait to see him.
Here's the thing that was interesting is I mentioned John Rooney, the reliever that they brought in, and that Dana Brown had said, hey, man, we're going to get you. Apparently, he's been optioned.
Like, oh, wow.
Life comes at you fast, it seems like.
Oh, wow.
So there you go. Shout out to Lamar Little League from Richmond, who plays for Bertha Williamsport tonight. So I believe that's at 6, the 832 said. So, yeah, shout out to them boys from the local area supporting mm-hmm. or rather putting on at a high stage. But coming up next, let's talk to Sean Pendergast and I believe Seth Payne out there in West Virginia give us a practice report on this day. We'll get that next. All right, this is a great time of day because we get to send it to West Virginia, baby. As Sean Pendergast joins us now for a practice report live from West Virginia, courtesy of Yingling. Now, with 100% more Seth Payne. What's happening, fellas?
That's right. Payne.
That was the can cracking. Yeah,
can
in
they
the microphone.
Get a Yingling with my face on it yet?
With your face?
Yeah.
Do you want a Yingling right now?
No, I want a can that has my face on it.
I'll talk
like
to
the Seth Payne
see what they can
whatever.
Do.
If they know business.
That'd be a big can, I tell you.
Yeah. Sounds like you guys are having fun in West Virginia.
Yeah.
Enjoy your time, enjoy Sean. I'll be gone. See you later.
Yeah.
No, I just look, it sounds like a better day from the offense. When D'Amico was talking about, he talked about individuals, but from your guys' perspective, how did the offense look? Because yesterday was obviously alarming hearing all the you know word out of West Virginia.
It looked cleaner. It just looked cleaner. I think from just the standpoint of it not being as bad, where you had like just multiple instances yesterday where not only did the pass protection break down, but either CJ didn't have answers for where to go with the ball, or you know he made bad decisions about where to go with the ball. It just looked like a cleaner operation, and I, you know, we've seen this throughout camp so far. The defense will kind of put it to the offense, and I think the offense adjusts however they need to adjust, and they made some improvements today. So it looked like it wasn't anything to get super excited about or to all of a sudden put your 401k on the Texans to be the top offense this year or anything, but it was a better performance.
No, yeah. But if I'm looking for something to get excited about real quick, guys, the run game was better today. This was the best. I thought this was the best day that the run game has had in camp, and specifically Nick Chubb. Nick Chubb finally broke off a big run that was like a legit big run, like not a training camp big run where guys are just sort of touching him as he goes through the middle of the field. It was a toss to the outside, and he took it. In a regular game, it would have been probably about a 30 or 35-yard run. It was really good to see. And he followed that up. He didn't have another big play like that, but I thought he looked pretty spry getting through the hole, had some nice wiggle. And the other, as we've seen throughout camp as well, the backup guys did some things as well. So I thought the running game looked, this is a way better day for the offense.
As far as the offense in total, obviously we want to talk about the ones a lot. But and listen, everybody, you can save your angry tweets. I'm going to talk about what I saw today.
Yeah!
Davis Mills, yeah. Magnificent.
It's true.
He connected with Jaden Higgins multiple times.
Three times.
He had a really nice shot downfield to Xavier Hutchinson. So Davis Mills, as he has for a lot of camp, he's put some good pieces of work together in practice.
Yep.
So are we, we're not grading on a curve here, right? Because it's been so bad. And that's kind of what I was listening to D'Amico. Like, this was legit a better day, or is it like, okay, so it's not disastrous?
I think that, okay, so for one thing with this team, the hard thing to judge during training camp is inside runs, when they're running between the tackles. It's really hard when you can't give the offensive line can't do a true, genuine double team where they're just trying to bury somebody in the dirt. They got to hold back a little bit. It's hard sometimes, and you give a little bit of a benefit of the doubt to the offense. But by the same token, when it does work, and even as they're not allowed to really put their all into a double team, I saw multiple instances today where they got good movement and good push up the middle of the defense. And then Nick Chubb, he might not be the peak version of Nick Chubb ever again, but he is a guy who's got good vision and is going to run the play as it's called and just run to the opening and run to the hole. And we saw multiple instances of that today to where, can they consistently run for positive yardage instead of just stuff, hey, break off a long run. I just want to consistently run for positive yardage. You can kind of start to see the vision for where Nick Chubb could be a part of that.
Very good. We're talking to Sean and Seth live from West Virginia, giving us a little bit of a practice report. And fellas, I would love to talk football, but I'm sorry. I'm a little bit of a drama king, queen, however you want to view it. We've got a fight. Can you guys break down the brouhaha for me, please?
Okay, yeah, Sean, you do the – I had a better shot of the Cade Stover versus C.J. Gardner-Johnson.
Okay, which was sort of a – that was more of, I would say, a play that was should have had a bigger brawl attached to it.
Yeah, so Cade Stover caught the ball and
– this is the undercard to the main event.
Yeah, C.J. Gardner-Johnson came up and wrapped him up, and as – I don't know if C.J. was going to take him to the ground or not, but from my vantage point, it looked like Cade wasn't happy about the level of contact. And he went ahead and just started to put C.J. Gardner-Johnson in a headlock as they were going to the ground.
Yep.
And then they got up and there was a scrum and you couldn't really see what was going on.
Right, right. So I immediately turned to Mark.
Oh, wait, but real quick.
Yeah, yeah.
But then, Cade Stover was amped up afterwards. Yeah. He was walking away and yelling and everything. I think it looks like he's got some new tattoos that I hadn't noticed before, which made it extra badass. Yep. Yeah, that was good.
So then I turned to Mark Vandermeer, who's sitting next to me, and I said, well, if we're not going to get a full-on fight with a big farm boy going against the habitual line stepper, then we're not going to see any fights this camp. And then, lo and behold, two plays later, Dalton Schultz catches a pass out in the flat. He's going to the ground to catch the ball, and Russ Yeast, number 25, comes in at head level. You know, it might have been one of those plays, like if there were referees there. We were a little far away to see exactly what the level of contact was. But Russ Yeast was clearly coming in to the ground, missile style, at Dalton Schultz. May have caught his head. It was tough to see from our vantage point. But Dalton Schultz and Yeast both got up. Schultz has the ball. He throws it at Russ Yeast's feet.
Mm.
Russ Yeast clearly says something to Schultz because Schultz then just runs at him and grabs him in a bear hug, and they start swinging on each other. So that was the main event, I thought. That was more – actually turned into a fight.
There were actual punches thrown in that one?
There were arms flailing, for sure. Yeah.
All right, so what about Christian Harris and Damian Pierce back on the field? What you guys saw?
They were not back on the field with their teammates. They were in uniform working out on a side field. So they didn't do any of the drills. They were literally in their own – workout mode with a trainer separate from everybody else. Now they're both moving very, very well. I will say that.
And I don't think they really want us talking exactly about what they were doing or how or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they were on a separate field working out. Yeah.
Heady play. All right, I will ask for a little bit more detail in the run game because I'm super excited, and we know that the offense is going to be predicated a lot more on the run. Was it mostly just with the ones, or was it all the way through? Because I think I've seen some people kind of hypothesize that Ed Ingram could have been very vital in helping them get the run open as well.
I don't look at, as far as picking out the individual guys, I would say as a group, they looked better in the run game. I think that I'm torn with the centers right now. With Jake Andrews, I think he's better as a run blocker, at least from what I've seen. He's a little bit more stout. I think both the centers have question marks when it comes to pass protection. And I think I would say the same for any of the guards as well. That's my biggest concern. The one-on-one pass rushes today, the guys did fine individually, but when it came to the games portion, where it was two-on-two, mm-hmm. the defensive line looked very much like the more veteran and capable group there. The best games that the defensive line ran today was when they ran no game at all. And usually what happens is the centers and the guards or the tackles are kind of like they're anticipating the game and they're waiting for the guys to twist. And then the defensive line doesn't do anything. They just bull rush them straight back into the quarterback. I didn't feel great about that portion for the offensive line.
All right. So, Seth, this is where I think you can really help give me some clarity. We're not out there. You guys are. It seemed, I mean, there's still the pass game. I mean, Kamar Lassiter had two more interceptions. He's having a great camp, like a truly great camp. But there's also seems to be some either miscommunication or maybe just a bad throw. Apparently one of them was overthrown by C.J. Stroud. What do you see in there in terms of just the passing game?
I think my biggest impression from C.J. realistically, and I'm not like pushing the panic meter or mm-hmm. anything, is that it doesn't feel like he's as accurate as he typically is. And I know that a lot of people don't want to hear anything about the fact that he didn't participate in OTAs until minicamp, or that don't read anything into how many reps he had early on or whatever. All I can say is that he doesn't seem like a ball placement specialist like he typically is. So is that because of just the difficulty that the defense is giving him, or is it something with his arm itself? I don't know. But if I had to, if you dropped me out there and I knew nothing about this team whatsoever, mm-hmm. I wouldn't be gushing about the quarterback's accuracy
right
now.
When CJ has looked at his best in this camp and here in West Virginia, to add on to the stuff we saw in Houston, to me it's been when he's going to his first read, mm-hmm. when he's just dropping back and it's the first guy. It's quick stuff before the defense, before the line has a chance to roll over the defensive line has a chance to roll over the offensive line. If it gets past his first read, it looks like his feet start to get a little jittery. Mm-hmm. Those are the balls he tends to sail. Also, the ones where he's had to wait a little bit longer, he's had a little more time in the pocket. So that's troubling. You know, there's enough I've seen with CJ here to where I have a concern level. I don't know how high the concern level is, but it exists. Like, yeah. I'm not brushing this off as, well, they're putting in a new offense, and he's got all these new linemen. And, boy, Will Anderson and Danielle Hunter sure are good. Like, yeah. he is missing on balls he normally makes.
He's sailed enough footballs that it feels like there could be a soundtrack with the Doobie Brothers behind it. Like, we're sailing on a yacht somewhere in the 70s.
Oh, yeah. We can just go Christopher Cross right there, man. Sailing straight up.
Christopher Cross, yeah.
All right, there, I was waiting. I was wanting to see if you would do it, and I appreciate that you actually delivered.
Yes.
I will try and deliver for this texter who wants to know what the weather is like up there. I feel like we know what's going to happen, but go ahead and do it to us.
It's like, I don't know. Like, I don't know how the Bible describes heaven necessarily. If I could give you some scripture, then maybe I could do it that way. But just about perfect, I guess.
It's awesome. It's been in the 60s. At practice, uh-huh. The only time it gets hot is when the sun, the cloud cover, a lot like in Houston, the cloud cover moves aside and the temperature gets up to 73.
Yeah.
Yesterday
was a little uncomfortable. I started
like
to
Houston.
Sweat a little bit yesterday when I was sitting on the patio for 3 hours.
Poor
almost.
Thing.
Well, because I had.
What did that feel like?
You know what? Hey, guys, you know why it's great? As you guys know why it's great to have a great co-host, I was looking out at the patio. I was like, you know what? I'm going to do some work out there, but man, the sun's actually shining kind of hot. And Sean, Sean says, hey, Seth, why don't you open up the umbrella on the table?
Yeah. I'm like, that's good advice.
I honestly wouldn't have thought of that.
That's beautiful.
I'm like, I would have sat out there in the sun.
Yin and the yang, baby.
I'm trying to get into the shade of the pole from this fabric thing behind. Yeah.
All right. I have a few quick things. So can we do this pretty quickly if you don't mind, fellas?
Sure.
I know that John wants to know. He wanted an update on the living situation because I don't think we had an opportunity to really check in with you guys and see how you guys
set the scene, man.
Okay, so Sean booked everything and everything. It's a nice ranch style home that's got a huge living room, a nice kitchen, a bird feeder, and we've got deer. We've got
Have you seen a black bear yet?
No
black bears yet, but we've got a doe and two fawns every morning.
Mm. Yeah,
and then we've got three bedrooms to choose from.
Yeah. Oh Lord.
Yeah, there was no Sean got the bedroom or a good bedroom or anything. Yeah, it's been delightful.
No, and the family of fawns, the family of deer, the doe and the two fawns. One of the fawns is very astute. The other one is stupid.
Yeah. Yeah, the mother and the one fawn will leap off into the woods when we open the patio door. Yeah. The other one just stops and stares at us and like just, I guess, waiting for us to shoot it.
Right.
To which Sean said, that's the Altuve deer. That's... He's just, he stops on the base paths and he's just standing there.
That deer is Altuve. I'm like, that's Altuve's deer right
So we've dubbed him Altuve.
Yes.
Very, well, that's adorable. We've got nicknames and everything. All right, Sean, you're familiar with Seth. You might not be. We've been doing our pet cats for a training camp. The guy, a different, you know, way of kind of looking at camp. Can you give us some winners on the day, a handful of winners on the day?
Well, on the day, or at least Darrell Taylor, man, he's fun to watch. The defensive end that they had signed.
We haven't talked about him.
Bro, let me go meathead here. Bro, if you walked out on the field and you just saw Darrell Taylor doing individual drills or something, you might think he was a Will linebacker. Like, he is, he's put together physically really well. He's undersized for a defensive end, but he can move.
Yeah.
And it's fun to watch him go. Like, here's a guy a lot of people remember had a really strong rookie season in Seattle and then kind of just faltered off. Spent 1 year in Chicago last year, and it was kind of a weird year for him, and they didn't use him as much as maybe they could have. But he looks really good. I'm intrigued by him.
Hmm. Anybody else?
Oh, I gave him mine yesterday. But,
okay, sorry.
Oh, I'm giving we're giving daily winners. Come on, man.
Like, Nick Chubb had it.
Daily winners.
Oh, sorry,
all right.
Yeah.
I thought you said something about pet projects or whatever.
Lassiter was looked like an all-pro out there today.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean, it wasn't just the two picks. Like, he was in everybody's hip pocket all day long. So I would say Lassiter and I would say Nick Chubb on the offensive side.
Yeah, and Lassiter, I spoke to Lassiter after practice yesterday, and we ended up kind of doing a lot of heavy X's and O's type of stuff. I had him teach me like I'm a high school defensive back, and which is kind of ambitious for my defensive back knowledge, but on a couple of his interceptions from last year. And he's a lot like Stingley in that when he starts talking about ball, you can just tell how much he studies and how much he's passionate about it. It's like hearing your a physics professor talk about physics, and they nerd out on it. It's really cool to listen to him and just watch the way he works and operates, like a real professional. He's like a 10-year vet.
All right. Petrie had a good day. Pete, real quick, too, I'll just give you a Petrie had a good day today, too. He had a pass breakup covering Nico Collins out of the slot. That was good to see. And he had a TFL on somebody where he just – Petrie stuff, man, just straight into the backfield, 6 yards behind the line of scrimmage. And I'm also bringing up, because I interviewed him after practice, and I'm gonna post that interview on social here within the next 30 minutes.
We're in the same spot. So you talked to Petrie. Seth, who'd you talk to?
I talked to Kalen Bullock.
Okay, perfect.
Oh, great.
All right, so that's what you should look out for at Sports Radio 610 on all social media. And then, of course, check out Seth and Sean themselves. Fellas, this is so fun. I think we should do this again tomorrow.
Yay.
Okay.
All right. Very good.
I'm in.
Sean and I are both coming on in separate times with Clint this afternoon.
I'm going on at 3:40. Seth's going on at 5:20. And we'll be on Area 45 at 7:40.
Beautiful. Awesome. Got it covered. And we appreciate you guys doing your work out in West Virginia. That was Sean Pendergast joining us for a practice report live from West Virginia, courtesy Yingling. And, of course, you got a bonus Seth Payne.
How about that?
Who could complain about bonus Seth Payne, man?
Yeah.
That's a great bonus to have on any given day. Appreciation to the fellas again. All right. Coming up next. Right here in the loop on Sports Radio 610. Nick Haley said something that seems like caught your attention. I want us to break it down next.